Mother Man.
What's up, y'all? Joey from Goremonger FTA Records here, and you're listening to Murder Metal Mayhem.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Fuck yeah. We're doing that Tuesday thing. What's going on, Chris?
What the fuck is happening, Pete? We are fucking partying, bro.
Hell yeah, dude. Episode 90, man. That's right. And we're not banned or canceled or anything.
Nope.
So you can
always listen to us.
That's right.
They're going to put us on lockdown. I'm going to be like, I'm sneaking out this bitch. They put me on lockdown and I run out of booze. You better believe I'm fucking out. I'm finding somewhere, bro.
You're going Walking Dead on it?
Yes, sir.
I've been psyched to do this one for a while. I can't believe that we're closing in on the final 10 episodes, though, before we hit 100.
Right? Hell yeah.
In June. So that's going to be crazy. We got a hell of a show in store for that one. We got some stuff on that later.
We got plans for that.
And we're doing this on St. Patrick's Day. How about that? Little celebration here in
the
Horns
Eye.
We got a little surprise guest here with us, Chris. Who tagged along with you tonight?
Shit. Cashman, man. Motherfucking Goremonger. What up, Joey?
How y'all doing?
Tag along with me. Motherfucker was my ride. I don't drive.
No, that's cool, man. Good to have you out here, Joey.
Always fun. Pretty ironic. The last time I was here for Paul and Carl, you also used the intro with me on it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Totally unplanned. So
yeah, it was unplanned, and it's always good to have you on and to have this shit going on.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris, what is going on with this fucking pandemic happening? And
shit, man.
We're just trying to fucking, you know, do what we do and do our podcast, but it's just crazy. It's like
everybody's everybody's going batshit crazy for shit tickets.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I don't know when this is going to end. I'm hearing, you know, possibly into the summer. Don't really know. So nobody knows, but it's fucked up. But like you said,
I'm just going to live my life, man. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the reaction seems a bit much for what's happening, but I get it. People are, you know, at risk, and some people are very, very passionate about this subject, so I just feel we should just keep fucking doing our thing. But definitely just wanted to recognize that we're living in some fucked up times with this virus
and
shit.
So. Never seen anything like this in their fucking lifetime. Like,
no.
This is fucking surreal, weird-ass fucking shit.
It is really surreal, so... Now, last week was another wicked episode. The senior citizen killing couple, Ray and Faye, Chris. Pretty fucked up story. Got the comic here tonight.
Yeah, dude. I see that. You bought that first issue of that Family Bones comic, dude.
Yeah.
I flipped through it. I want to check the whole thing out. Legit, though. That's fucking pretty interesting. It's even got their actual picture. Like, when you Google them and look at pictures.
Right.
Like, one of the main pictures on Google is, like, in the comic book. It's like, all right.
That's awesome.
About that shit.
Yeah, and it was written by her nephew, so that's really fucked
really
up.
Yeah, like, oh, this is what my family did. This is where I come from. Come fuck with me.
I told Joey I should get a hold of the guy and see if he wants to come on the show, because that'd be really cool.
That would be fucking cool.
Yeah, so we're going to reach out. And so, yeah, we brought the comic along with us tonight. And definitely that was a good one. CK talking about the band Toxic, plus his usual metal updates. Also, we got to open up that March Mayhem contest, Chris. That was awesome.
We got fucking round two going today.
That's right. Three contestants in there, listeners to the show. And it's going to go on the whole month of March. But tonight, like you said, Chris, second round. And down to the Hateful Eight. So we got eight of them going at it in four matches. So it should be brutal.
It's going to be fucking great.
Since the basketball tournament and pretty much everything else in the fucking world is getting canceled, it's good to know that Murder Metal Mayhem keeps rolling the fuck on. You got 89 episodes before this to listen to. That's a lot of fucking hours.
Go check it out if you haven't. Dude, it's weird because me and Michael and Derek were sitting around. We were watching the UFC fights the other night with nobody in the stands. It was really
weird.
UFC fights with nobody in the stands. Wow. It's so weird.
That is really strange.
I mean, they're announcing them like there's people there because they're still broadcasting, so the announcements.
True.
Still, when somebody's winning and shit and you just don't hear the roar in the background.
See,
it's
I
so
thought with those
crazy.
Events, maybe I'm cheating myself out of some royalty money here, but I think what they should do is gather the fans off site and then pipe in the fucking cheering.
But
like,
that's still
but
a gathering
they got
to
gather. That's what I was just thought myself. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that fuck. It's a groups of seven. I don't know. I mean, it's fucked up, man. So yeah, I figured there's got to be some way they can get fucking some crowd noise in there. But if you can't get a crowd together, I guess that's the problem. It's fucked up. So tonight, though, we're going to do another prison escape feature. This time, going out to the state of Virginia and the Mecklenburg Prison. Got Tex raring and ready to go. It's been a while for Tex.
Been a minute for Tex. It was the Texas 7 last time.
Texas 7, and we did the Kenneth McDuff.
Did he do the
He did the bonus Carlos. He did do the New Mexico prison riot.
Yeah, yes, I thought he did that one too.
And
the only prison one he didn't do was the Black Dolphin. Right?
Correct. Yes.
And this is your fourth prison one.
Yeah, yeah. They're fun to do. There's some good ones, man. Attica would be a good one too.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, great to have Tex on for this one. Definitely a huge asset with his experience and working for the prisons down in Texas. CK is going to be calling in like always, schooling everybody. He's got a Chicago band on tap this time. The kind of the doom metal icons back in the fucking day, Trouble.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
They've been around for fucking ever, man. I know they were around when I started listening to underground metal, which would have been like 83, 84.
Right.
And they were around then. So, yeah, it's definitely old school. So you young fans definitely want to take some notes tonight because we're going to go old school on you tonight with some Trouble. Also, we're going to keep him on like we've been through the Mayhem segment. So we're going to be doing that second week of the contest. And we got our listeners, Chris. Who are the three we've got in here ready to fucking go again this week?
We got Justin from Lexington, Illinois. We got Stephanie from Toledo, Ohio. We got this stuff. We got this, y'all. And we got Steven from Chicago.
Hey, I got you, Steven. And CK's got Justin. So three of us are going playing each other every week. And at the very end, we're going to see it's almost difficult to do it as we go with the scoring. It really has to just play itself out, and then we'll see how it shakes down. But basically, whichever one of us has the highest
ranking
person that survives, you know, or, you know, how it ranks, whatever one has the highest, will win it. So, and then we've got 15 tiebreakers if we don't get it on the first one. So,
God damn it.
So, yeah, it's funny because a couple of us have the same number too.
Yeah.
That the number ones are all different. So it's very interesting. It'll be cool to see it end. And either way, everybody's going to win, man, because we got some really good prizes for everybody. But of course, the grand prize, Chris, is what?
Get to do an episode of the podcast with Messenger, Skype, however you need to do it. And be fucking awesome. Have a good fucking time.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. And we'll put them on a murder segment and then let them pick it out of a group. We'll give them a list
and be fucking fun.
Yeah. That was your idea to let them pick the episode. I think that's great.
Right. Yeah.
So,
I mean,
that's
sense.
Awesome.
Like,
we've got a list.
Might,
I mean, fuck, they could go through the whole list and pick something.
Like,
so,
boom.
And if they even have their own idea that we don't have, I'd be willing to hear them out.
I would definitely be willing
so
to hear
So we're
them
always
like,
down
okay,
with
we'll
doing something.
Check that out and talk about it.
Yeah. So huge thanks to sponsor SpellboundEffectsAndArt.com. Tony Campagna just continues to crush it. with some intense Ed Gein inspired artwork. Joey, I know you love our lamp in here. Yeah,
I mean, I like all the pieces that you guys have gotten from him, and
yeah,
you know, the catalog leaves a lot to be desired too.
Oh, dude, yes, it does, dude. I love
Chris been looking at that cowboy hat forever.
That cowboy hat, and then that skull with the hand going through the mouth was so fucked up.
Yeah,
man, I love that shit.
I may buy a cowboy hat, and that way I could just walk around the apocalypse with that on, being like, don't dude, fuck with me, bro.
Dude,
see, right? The last person that fucked with me, man, I'm wearing them on my head.
The way people are freaking out right now, could you imagine if you walked into a Hawks with that fucking hat on?
Oh, my God.
People would lose their shit, man.
Walking into the gas station, like, what up? They'd be like, what's happening?
Who is that on your hat? Oh, man. So Tony's stuff is just amazing. Spellbound Effects and Art.com. Support indie artists like Tony, and he's a huge supporter of the show. More of a reason to check out his work. Definitely. And buy some. So,
His artwork.
Yes. And a huge thanks to everybody out there listening. We do appreciate it. Continue to see the numbers. London was still in the top 10 the last time I checked, as well as Winnipeg, Manitoba up in Canada. So we get two foreign countries with cities on our top 10
that's
list, which
cool,
is
man.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah,
so thank you,
Canada,
everybody. Yeah, Canada's good to us. So spread that shit like a case of the clap at a fucking trailer park, man. They got trailer parks up there.
I've seen
Canada,
shows.
Of course. We've seen some shows about that subject, haven't we? So we got a lot of shit on our plate tonight. Got Joey in here with us. Got Tex coming up. Got six inmates who escaped from death row desperately trying to get away. So hopefully Tex can help us, you know, make sense of this shit, because it's a crazy one. Probably one of the most original prison escapes I've ever heard of. I really like it.
Yeah.
So, Chris, what do we need to do?
Let's get our prison escape on.
I am the best of a chance. My God, the devil is an icon.
Jesus Christ, man. Dying fetus, man.
I fucking love fetus, wow. Dude. First time ever seeing him was at the
Lafayette
Club, yeah. Dude.
It, invert
was
the
like
idols.
17, bro.
Fuck.
It was awesome.
Yeah, that is some sick shit. And good to be back, though, man. We're in our murder segment. Got Tex here with us. How's it going, dude?
It's going real good, man. Happy St. Patty's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you, too,
yeah,
sir.
How funny is that? Are you drunk yet, Tex? Are you starting to tip a few back? Or?
Oh, you know, it's St. Patty's Day, but in light of the current situation, I'm down here sipping on a couple of Coronas.
Nice.
Yes, sir.
Nice.
I almost bought some Coronas to bring out with me tonight just for the fuck of it, but I was like, I had a couple the other day. I'm good with what I normally drink.
Very cool. And we still got, of course, Joey Gormonger in here with us. So
yes,
Joey.
Sir.
And we're going to be getting into a good one tonight. And we have done a few other podcasts on prisons before. So if you guys like this topic, go and listen to some of the others. We've done Black Dolphin Prison, and then the ones we've done with you, Tex, New Mexico Prison Riot, Texas 7, and we've done other episodes too. Yeah,
right.
And then that Carla Faye Rewind we did with you. So definitely always fun to have you on, man, because your input is much appreciated. So
I think I was on for the New Mexico
one. I'm glad
one
to be
too.
On, man.
I think so.
Yeah, crazy.
That's awesome, dude. And yeah, Joey, I think you were on that that one with Tex too.
So
yeah, that's awesome, man. A little family here at Horns High Studios. So, and despite the apocalypse and all this shit going down, the Murder Metal Mayhem train just continues to roll the fuck on. So,
boom.
We're gonna do this one here. A little prison story. It starts out in the state of Virginia. Where their death row was housed in Mecklenburg Prison, or Mecklenburg County near Boydston, known as the Mecklenburg Correctional Center. So opened in 1976 as a state-of-the-art prison.
It costs a shit ton of money to fucking
build. Back in the day, especially, yeah, 20 like, million.
$20 million. Shit.
It was like the state-of-the-art place, according to the documentary I watched. Eventually closed, though, in 2012.
It was like the Titanic, though.
Right.
Unsinkable, but guess what?
Yeah. That's true. You know, they had a decrease in inmates in Virginia's prison system, as well as an expensive maintenance cost. But what's going to go down in history, of course, about it was this daring escape of these guys on death row, six inmates in 1984. So definitely a wild one. They came up with, I think, a pretty brilliant plan, and we're going to dig into those details tonight.
It was pretty crazy. Some of the shit they pulled off was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and according to the documentary, it said it was the biggest escape ever from death row in U.S. history.
Oh, I
so,
believe it.
Pretty crazy. Now, Tex, when I brought this case up to you, had you ever heard of it? Because, of course, you've got your corrections background here.
Yeah, man, I grew up in Virginia. I was 12 at the time.
No shit.
Yeah, and when they escaped, my grandpa was part of a hunt club. So all of the local hunt club.
Are you fucking serious, dude?
Yeah.
That's
about
insane.
30 miles from my house was a prison.
Oh, my gosh.
And my grandpa and all of his hunt club people got all their shotguns, and they just went out in the posse.
That's fucking nuts.
That's
dude.
Fucking crazy, dude.
That is really scary. Cool. But yeah, scary as hell. It had to have been.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, what about you? Had you heard of this before we talked about it? Because we watched a lot of this true crime stuff.
This one in particular, until you brought it up to me? No, I had no idea, man.
That's cool. And I don't know. I think I stumbled on it when I watched like a Texas 7. And I think it showed like other prison escapes.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, that looked cool, you know. But I really like this story. It's just, it's very, very interesting. Joey, what about you? Had you ever heard of this?
I had heard of it. I didn't know any details until you had brought it up. The only reason I had heard of it was growing up in Connecticut.
Okay.
You know, I was six at the time or whatever. And I remember the news about the manhunt and the big escape. But I didn't really know anything about it, and it wasn't until you brought it back up that I went back and researched.
Jogged
and actually understand,
and shit,
you
right.
know.
Right.
I just knew there was like a big prison escape there.
That's cool. Yeah, it's an interesting story, and definitely some really bad dudes involved in this one. I mean, they were all on death row waiting for their turn in the electric chair, so definitely nothing to fucking lose, which is bad.
Yeah, might as well fucking die trying. I guess, but
yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, two brothers among the six escapees who were definitely the worst of the worst. Tex, some fucking awful motherfuckers. James and Linwood Briley. Just those names alone, escaping has got to be pretty scary if you're around that area, man.
Yeah, probably to this day, I could probably call up my mom and talk to her about it, and she would tell stories.
Wow.
I know she was scared.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet. I mean,
yeah, they said, you know,
prolific, basically serial killers.
Oh, yeah. These guys were fucked up. I mean, they were serious pieces of shit. They went on a fucking killing spree with a third brother and an accomplice in 1979. They fucking robbed an elderly couple, tied them up before dousing the house in gas and lighting it on fire, killing a 17-year-old boy, crushing his head with a cinder block. Beat a 62-year-old woman, raping pregnant women. I mean, just some really fucked up shit.
Yeah, it just killed to kill.
I mean, really awful. So, I don't know, Chris. I mean, it sounds like these two were, you know, obviously some bad motherfuckers, but, you know, they should have been on fucking death row. I mean,
they shouldn't have been on death row as long as they were.
No, yeah, that's
like
true.
Like, they should never had the chance to escape. That's my feelings.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, the prison system,
like,
of course, is what it is. But, yeah, when the you fuck. Do shit like that, yeah. They should have been executed quicker, you know, like
very
they
quick.
Do. But that's another story, of course, for another
it should
day.
It should have been in Texas, huh?
Yeah, Tex, you guys wouldn't have messed with them down there, that's for sure.
It would have been quick, I can tell you that.
Now, while the Briley brothers were probably the worst of the worst, each of them had murdered, you know, to end up on death row with a date to be with the electric chair. Others were Lem Tuggle. That's got to be the best fucking hillbilly fucking name I've ever heard. Tex, you didn't go to school with a Lem Tuggle, did you?
My name
he
Lem
sounds
Tuggle.
Like a guy that needs to be on death row in Virginia. Okay.
My name Lem Tuggle. I just fucked your mama.
Earl Clanton, that's another one. Derek right. Peterson and Willie Jones. Five of the inmates were black. The only one that was white was old Lem Tuggle. So
old hippo boy.
Yeah, so big old hoss.
Dude, big old hoss.
Now, Tex, these are some bad son of a bitches. Definitely not, you know, people anyone would want free and roaming around, which is obviously the source of this, you know, fear that you talk about.
Yeah, I remember the news stories of, you know, they'd get tips on where they were.
Right.
Over Southern Virginia, and there was always rumors of rapes and burglaries and all kinds
man.
Of shit. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, got to be scary as hell. As we've talked before with these prison escape stories, though, the inmates have, you know, nothing but time and can observe the way that the guards do their job and sometimes can find holes insecurity and figure out ways to exploit weaknesses. Yeah, I mean, we've done this before. Texas 7 was the same way, you know.
Exactly. When you're watching the guards that close, and if there's certain nothing against you, Tex, just
of
saying.
Of course.
If there's certain ones that just skip part of the process that they're supposed to go through, and they notice they do it every time, it's like, okay, we got that opening, we got that opening. I mean, I can see how it works.
Yeah, I mean, Tex, the training has got to be intense for the corrections officers, I'm sure, and how they're supposed to do what they do.
It is, but, you know, you're always going to have those that they don't do anything by procedures. They just do what they want to do.
Oh,
they're there
wow.
for a paycheck.
I was just going to say they're there for the paycheck and don't give a shit.
Yep.
Yeah. So these guys are able to find their ways around the security, and they were very smart about things. They handpicked who was going to be participating in the escape based on the size of the guards and the uniforms they were going to get, you know, so that they would look legit. Definitely not stupid.
And like in one of the documentaries, like the guard straight up, like, he asked me what size uniform I wear, and I told him not thinking, but I was like, hey, Tex, if you're on duty and one of the inmates is asking you, hey, what size uniform do you wear? You're just going to let it go and tell him what size, right? And just walk away. Is that what's going to happen?
Hey, what are you wearing? Khaki.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that was funny though. Like he didn't see anything
yeah,
wrong
how could
with
you
telling
not
them
know
that.
They're trying to make a plan, asking people in or guards what their sizes are.
Right. So they're definitely not stupid. Willie Turner and an inmate who is really good at making weapons, just about hide them anywhere. He bragged about making a key for every cell he was ever in. I thought that was fucked up. And he was suspected to be the brains behind the operation. But due to a pending appeal, he decides not to go with the others and he stays behind. So,
and he left a journal of the whole thing too.
Yeah, he
did. That's who that was, right? Yeah.
Now, Chris, I know we've talked about it on here before, but you've done, you know, some time in county. Are inmates even in that situation thinking about trying to break out? I mean,
not in county. I don't know, Cashman. You've been to the joint. How many times you fucking think about busting out of that bitch?
I mean, I think if you put any person in, it's going to depend on the situation too. Because even if you're in county or something, if something's happened with like your family,
you want to get out.
It is so fucked up not to be able just to be there.
Right.
Like that was the hardest thing for me being locked up was like. Certain parts of your life, you have to deal with the fact you're not fucking going to be there for it. You're not going to be able to help out with it. You're where you're at, and
that's
they're going to have to figure it out. But it's so fucking stressful that especially I don't have kids and shit, but I could see somebody in that situation, you know, taking more extremes to really consider getting the fuck out.
Right.
You know, so.
But these guys just wanted out to be out.
Right, true.
Yeah.
No, but no, I get what you're saying about fucking
everything. I mean, these guys also, you got to think, these guys also want it out because they have the fear of they're going to die over there. Right. Too,
exactly. So. They right. know they're going to die soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tex, did you want to chime in on that conversation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the ways we, you know, combat stuff like that is we do cell searches. We have informants because there are those like long-term sentence people. They don't want to cause any type of situations or anything. So they inform on whoever's going to do what. And then also like death row, they always move. I think it's like every 3 weeks now they move cells. So
oh, they don't, okay.
Really? Yeah, they don't that way they're not, I, not that too makes comfortable. Sense. Like death row, like moving yeah. to the new house too soon.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Tex, I mean, I know these escapes are rare, but do corrections officers foil escape plans often and we just don't hear about it? Or is it something, you know, that makes for more of a sensational movie or a TV show, but isn't really something that happens much?
I think most of the guys that are convicted, like I was saying, they just want to do their time and get out. That's like probably 95%.
Right.
And then you get the people like the Texas Seven or these Briley cats, you know, they don't have anything to lose, especially the Brileys and these guys, Earl Clanton and Lim Tuggle. They're going to get out and go do their business. I mean, they're going right. to die anyway. So
right.
They might as well.
Might as well die trying to be free or
yeah.
like whatever.
Fuck it. Yeah, pretty yeah. much living in the now and just saying screw it because I'm going to die anyway. So. Now, on the night of May 31st, 1984, they begin to act on this plan. They convince the guards to bring them back, a few of them back to, into the prison. The rest were on the yard.
Yeah, they were doing two of them. One complained that he
like
had
a knee injury or something.
And the other one said he had to use the fucking bathroom.
Yeah. So, you know, they get them back early. And I know in some of the post-escape discussions, they say, you know, how that was definitely a breakdown.
You're not supposed to separate the inmates. Like, if one goes in, they all go right. in at the same time is what they were saying.
Yeah, and it also and messed up their like, counts, right?
Tex, is that messed up their count. Is that true, Tex? Like, if you're taking inmates in, do you take individual ones in like that, like in a high security like that?
We do. Most of the time where I work administrative segregation now, and we escort one inmate at a time.
Oh, do you?
But if you're, yeah. But something like this situation, you would escort them all at the same time. And
okay.
you would also, like a constant count. Like if I have 10, I'm going to use my fingers. And it's not that hard to keep up with 10
No,
inmates.
It is not.
Right.
So, I mean, apparently it was hard for these guys.
If you can miscount 10, you're fucking stupid.
Because that one goes into the bathroom, Earl,
yeah.
goes into the bathroom and locks himself, you know, gets himself in there. So they miscount, so they don't even account for him not being around. And then an inmate signals to Earl, who's, you know, jumps out of there, and he gets into that control room because that guy left the door propped open because they had observed yeah. him doing that. So that's
he
all
doesn't
from that
lock the,
watching.
The control room door like he's supposed to. So
right.
he's hiding in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And one of the other inmates hollered at him like, hey, he's out. And he jumped out and tackled dude and took
yep.
control.
Yeah. I mean, and then you got, you know, the main hub of that whole area in their control, and that's definitely fucked up. There was a female nurse giving out medication to inmates who got caught up in the mess and narrowly escaped, you know, major attack
they
by several inmates. They
yeah,
were starting
they were
to mess
starting,
with her.
Somebody was like, no, motherfucker, this ain't what's happened. We got
right.
this agenda.
Right.
Fuck that.
Yeah, so that saved her there. But, man, that's just, I don't know, Tex. I mean, I'm sure you see it a lot, but the females working in the male institutions, I don't know, man. That just doesn't seem like a very good idea.
Well, the way it is now, there's not a lot of blind spots. I mean, assaults and stuff and rape still happen. But the staffing and everything right now is set up to where, at least in Texas, where we have enough staff where we can watch each other. So it's not that bad.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. At least you guys are protecting each other. Fucking don't need somebody like Cashman over here fucking tagging you in the goddamn joint. That's just, these are jokes. These are jokes.
This story reminds me of the Texas 7 story we did, because they're able to pick off the guards one at a time.
When I was started research, I was like,
it almost seems like it's the same one, right? It's like, very similar. I wonder which one came first. Which one of the two came first? I didn't think about that.
I think this one happened first.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, I think you're right.
And you know what is, I think, if I remember right, that both of these cases, they did find a journal for both of those, right?
In the Texas 7,
I think they found a manuscript or something.
They did find the manuscript in the Texas 7, yeah.
Yeah, they did.
So that's fucking crazy. So, it is weird. Like I said, when I started researching, it's like, why does it sound so fucking familiar?
Yeah, because there are so many similarities. And one of the guards that was interviewed on the documentary I watched said that he believed them to be real guards because they looked so much the part and they had the uniform that
they
fit.
They were clean shaven.
Cleaned up. One by one, they're able to call the guards on prison radios to coming up with reasons to get them on the death row, where they would be abducted and stripped of their uniforms. So they were very systematic about it. Joey, these guys definitely, pretty smart the way they had this thing pretty organized. Right?
It reminds me, we're talking about how they sit back and watch all this and, see the opportunities and the mistakes that the guards make or whatever. And it reminds me so much of stories of crocodiles and alligators and how they'll watch a campsite for fucking days to get the routine of somebody, and then to attack them at the perfect time.
I didn't realize that. That's fucked up.
So it kind of reminds the predatory aspect.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Tex, there had been talk around the prison about a possible bomb threat, but that was made up by inmates as a distraction, and also became part of the plan because, when they brought up the bomb on that night they escaped, that was something that they had been looking for. So I think that made it sound more legit. I mean, don't you think so?
I think it was in this situation. I would have probably used a fight in another part of the prison as a distraction or something like that. But,
oh, sure. Hey,
it worked for these guys.
Yeah, it sure did. It was just kind of crazy because you think somebody tips them off that somebody's making a bomb. They're going to escape. So they do all these, searches and don't find anything. And then this happens. So then the guards are like, oh, shit. They had been looking for a bomb. So to me, it seems like, it kind of made sense. It's just kind of crazy how it worked out.
Like the fucking what they used for the bomb, though. You're searching the goddamn cells.
A TV.
You got a fucking TV. I mean, I know, it's not a huge TV, so it's not something big. But still, at the same time, how are you not going to notice if there's a bomb? Take every precaution. I get it, but
I think it was just the way it went down. It just seemed like it made sense.
Yeah, definitely the way everything went into motion perfectly.
It was like the perfect storm. I think any little wrinkle in this thing would have never happened. They just had the perfect situation that came up, and they were smart. They've already got this thing going with the bomb. So I think that maybe was part of the reason why it was able to get pulled off. They dress in these guard uniforms. They put on the riot gear, covers up their identity even more.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of crazy too. They were got the riot gear, face masks and everything. So it covers their faces.
Totally. And then they got that fire extinguisher, Chris. And what did they do with,
kind of sprayed the extinguisher around the TV covered in a blanket to make it look like it was smoking. Everybody just freaks out fuck. Everybody left.
Yeah, I mean, that adds to the urgency. Somebody says there's a bomb.
And it's about to go, it might go up.
And it's smoking. And some dude's in riot gear. I'm like, get it the fuck out of here, And that's pretty much what happened. They've got a van that pulls up and they just jump in and drive the fuck out, man. That is just crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts, dude.
Now, Tex, can you explain to our listeners what a sally port is? Because I know that's how they got out. And I've worked in prisons before, and have had to deal with going in and out of those. But can you let other people know what that is? Because they reference the Sallyport a few times in this story.
Yeah, Sallyport is a secure location that has one door on one side and one door on the other. So you open one door, but keep the other one closed.
Right.
And then the people or the vehicle goes into the Sallyport, and you close the first door, and then you search the people or the vehicle and anything in the vehicle inside the Sallyport. Once that is clear, you can open the interior gate and let the people onto the facility or out the other side.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
This situation, they convinced the person to open both at the same time.
Yes, right. They did. Yes, they did.
What do you think of that? I mean, I know it's a bomb, but man, it just...
Yeah, it's supposed to be a bomb, but...
It's like Corrections Officer 101. Like, you don't open both of them at the same... Or is there a provision for that, Tex? I mean, would that be a plan? If there's a bomb, you open them both up and let them out?
No, not in Texas. We learned from this incident, and we learned from the Texas 7.
Right.
Yeah, we don't do any of that stuff anymore.
That's good.
Around. Yeah,
that's
not good. Fucking around.
But that's what's so crazy about, like, the prison escapes is it's kind of like an escalation, and you keep seeing new schemes coming up.
Right.
Because you think way back in the day, John Dillinger escaped with a piece of wood and some shoe polish.
Right.
And he made look like a gun, and he got out of...
Right.
And, you know, and the escalation to now these guys have fucking riot gear and, making a...
That
a,
is
a
fucking crazy
bomb.
The way the difference is, though,
it's
dude.
Like they just keep coming up with idea after idea. And in hindsight, it's like, holy fuck, how'd they get away with that dumb shit? But it's like, to those people, they're like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clever stuff. I mean, all the prison... Escape stories, Escape from Alcatraz is extremely fascinating. I just think these stories are neat, and I think it's just a matter of, you know, idle time and all sorts of, you know, devious shit going on, and these guys come up with some pretty creative shit now and then, that's for sure.
They should probably use that knowledge to not do dumb shit.
Yeah, that's what we talked about one time, is these fucking guys should start a damn business or something.
Like, come on,
like, what
man.
The fuck? They just get wrapped up in some bad shit. So at 10:47 p.m., the six inmates left the prison in a van before anyone had a clue of what really went down. It took them less than 2 hours from when they started this to when they actually got out. All of the six.
Dude, it took them like less than 3 minutes to get the first guards penned up.
Yeah,
like,
they were quick about it, but it's they were systematic crazy. And got it done and were able to get out of there unscathed. All six combined, though, were doing time for killing a total of 17 people, as you pointed out, Chris. So Jesus Christ. Chris, what do you think about the idea that, with this fake bomb? I mean, that was pretty ingenious, I think, the way they did it.
No, I think, like you said earlier, like the fact that they started a rumor like weeks earlier.
Right.
That way, once they took control of everything and they had the uniforms of the other guards on, they had somebody, another guard come in, or they were on the radio saying, we got a bomb.
Right.
Like, it made sense. Like, oh, we've heard rumors about a bomb.
Right.
But at the same time, how could you not notice something like that?
Yeah, you would think when they were tossing those cells, they would have found something of that size. 100%. You know, that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm totally in agreement with you.
It was a fucking goddamn great idea to use a bomb tactic.
Yeah.
The way, like I said, the way
Yeah,
because
it freaks people out, man. You say the word bomb and it's smoking.
You can't say bomb on an airplane.
That's right. <Yep. laughs> Now, the governor calls a state of emergency. The National Guard is called in. Choppers are in the air. The media is going crazy. Definitely makes the prison system in general look bad, especially in Virginia. The inmates drive into nearby North Carolina. They ditch the van in a schoolyard where some trees were, in a grove of trees.
Yeah, like... Backed in.
But it was kind of obvious. They should have made it a little bit more
like
discreet.
Yeah, like the aerial video, you see, like, it's backed in with the whole front end sticking out.
Yeah,
like,
it's goofy. It's it looks odd. But they might have bought a little bit of time if they would have hit it a little bit better. But they can't agree on, what they're going to do next, so they decide to split up. And the police realize what a mess they have on their hands with these violent inmates. Now, back at the prison, they're trying to figure out, you know, clues on their escape. They're going through the cells. They don't really find a whole lot. They find some shanks. But, you know, with nothing to lose, these fuckers are dangerous. And citizens.
Yeah, they're like, dude.
They're freaking out. Like
six convicted murderers fucking ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, citizens are concerned. They're arming themselves. The gun stores are clearing out. People are on edge, man.
Yeah. It was fucking insane. Dude, hey, Tex, like, so why is that? Why do you think they split up as opposed to the Texas Seven? Do you think it, did they always split up, or do you think, which do you think is better, stay together?
I think it's better to stay together. And I read an article when they called Lem Tuggle. The reason they split up, I think it was him and Hugh Jones, right?
Yeah.
I think so. His quote was, I'm the only white guy, and they made me sit in the back.
Oh, shit.
For real. I mean,
that was a comment. That's funny.
Like, whatever, fuck you.
Yeah, man, I think it's better to stick together, at least for the, you know, the a little bit, and then let everything calm down and then split up.
Yeah, I think that's how the Texas Seven was gone for so long, as they stayed together. So nobody was able to do dumb shit. Right. You had the brains kind of keeping an eye on everybody, whereas if they're all split up,
you know, all it don't takes know what's going to happen with this person.
Dumbass. Like fucking Earl Clanton and fucking Derek Peterson are caught at the laundromat in Warrenton, North Carolina. They're seen by a local cop who's driving by, sees one of them in the prison guard jacket. But
yeah, he's still wearing the prison fucking shit. How fucked up is that?
He ripped the patches off, though, guys. I mean, he was thinking,
he's like, I'm cool, man.
What an idiot.
Like, no, it's the same color, same cut, same everything.
Like, you can't steal anything off a clothesline somewhere.
Right. You know? Yeah, because it's like the next day, you know. Now, I thought it was funny, though, that they were eating wine or drinking wine and eating cheese.
It's like, oh, we're classy now, motherfucker. Sitting in the laundromat, not in prison.
I mean, you come out of prison, you go to a fucking convenience store. Who the fuck would buy wine and cheese? Wouldn't you be buying like booze. Slim Jims and Hostess cakes and
Big Macs and dope?
No, they're like Big Macs and dope. No, they're like, give me some of that Boom's Farm and some of that American Slices, yo.
Yeah, they didn't say what kind of cheese or wine
it
was.
Oh, you know it was a box of wine.
Yeah, it was a box of wine, bro.
Oh, God. I just thought that was so funny. So
stupid, doing your laundry.
Oh my God! So
Should have had that fucking coat in the washing machine, motherfucker.
Tuggle, Jones, and the two Briley brothers stole a pickup from somebody's driveway. The Briley brothers are taken to Philadelphia, where they're able to connect with an uncle who actually got them jobs at a garage under assumed names. Tuggle and Jones, though, planned to escape into Canada, but they only made it to Vermont.
They fucked up.
Yeah. 6 days after their escape, Tuggle is busted stealing $80 from a souvenir shop.
Well, no. They fucking goddamn went to that shop before.
Right.
And then he went back and went after he left there, yeah, he went the wrong way, like 200 miles south instead of north.
Oh, that's right. That's
and they're like, you know where that shop was? You were like 5 miles away from the goddamn Canadian
right there.
Border.
Yeah, he was right there. Like,
whatever, dude. I guess I'm fucked.
So
that's what made him sit back.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny.
I thought it was funny, though, when they actually, because they, like, chased him a little bit and whatever. And when you finally pull over, you get out and he's like, yep, my name's Tuggle. I'm wanted in Virginia. And, like, they just got out, like, going back to prison. Like, didn't fight or nothing.
Not much else you could do about it, you know. And then Jones eventually gives himself up the next day, only a few miles from the border. He's cold, hungry, getting bitten up by flies. He was all tore up. He talked to his mom, who convinced him to turn himself in.
I mean, that's a good mom. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Because she knew that he'd wind up killing him, you know. So, yeah.
you know, your mom's always going to want you to do the right thing.
Fucking right.
Or at least you would, unless you're Henry Lee Lucas's mom or somebody like that. I mean,
then your mom don't give a shit.
That's right. So the police are looking into families of the remaining inmates, trying to find places that they may go. Now, Tex, it figures that the most devious of the group, the Briley brothers, are still out there on the run. They're the last ones to get captured, man.
Yeah, with the connections they had and the families and then, you know, them giving them aliases and giving them jobs,
Was that? Lucky and...
They had different... Yeah, Lucky was one of
Lucky and Slim?
Something like that. Something like that. So after eluding capture for 19 days, the Briley brothers are taken into custody under the FBI, or after the FBI put a tracer on their phone. I know they go through texts like the prison call records, but the phone numbers didn't match, so they were given them wrong numbers or something like that. I remember hearing in one of the documentaries.
No, I didn't see that one.
Okay, yeah, I can't remember which one it was, but it said something about when they went through the records
like they
from
called
the prison.
Certain numbers, and they weren't the same.
They weren't the same numbers. Like they gave them fake numbers.
They were giving
numbers.
Them fake names or whatever with the number they were calling or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
But
so
the one that got put together, like actually got put together, was their uncle that
right
there.
Yeah, the uncle showed up on there, and that's how they were able to find him in Philadelphia. All of the six inmates are taken back to Virginia, heavily guarded, of course, $10 million bond on each one of them. I'm sure, though, that they were rock stars back at Mecklenburg, but their celebrity would not save their asses. They still had a date with the electric chair, though, so they were going to get theirs.
A couple of them got lethal injection because they stopped the electric chair before
all of them
got put to death.
That's true.
But they got that fucking needle.
Yeah, now Tex, I think it was pretty obvious that the guards were going to be kind of suspected as being involved in this somehow. I mean, they're only making, it said, $13,000 a year at the time. It's no wonder, you know, that guards would kind of fall prey to that.
Yeah, pay has a lot to do with it. Training, everything like that. And we're getting some in now. I probably shouldn't say, but they're owned by the gangs when they first come into pre-service.
Oh,
so
wow.
So they're already part of the gang, so they just go in there and do whatever the gangs want them to do.
Oh, that's fucking scary, man. Sucks. I never heard of that before, but that would kind of make sense, you know, that they would have a line on, you know, these guys coming into the, you know, the prison as a guard, and they, like you said, they've got them under their thumb. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, they had also said that tensions had been high for the past couple years after a controversial execution where the electric chair malfunctioned. And Frank Coppola, I think that was his name, caught on fire.
Fucking
definitely.
I was going to say that too.
That's where he got that idea from, probably.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I didn't even think of that tie, but that would make sense.
That dude like burned on fire, so all the inmates are like, "Oh, wait, this could fucking happen to me, bro."
Yeah,
like, I'm not.
Yeah,
about
it was
that.
A big deal, man. And you know, media went crazy with it. Of course, he becomes a martyr with the inmates. You know, so Tex, I mean, that had to be a pretty, you know, I mean, talk about getting inmates riled up. I mean, that would definitely do it.
Yeah, it sure would. Right now in Texas, we're going through, I think they had one execution a few years ago where the guy lived for about 30 minutes after he was supposed to have already died. So they were looking. Yeah, they were looking into the drugs that we're using, and we had to change, I think it was two of the types of drugs that we're using or something like that.
But, wow.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever been directly involved in an execution? I don't remember if we've talked about this before.
No, I haven't been in a death house when it was going on. The closest I've been is we have a command post when we, for the female inmates, they're at Mountain View in Gatesville,
right,
and the death house is in Huntsville, They'll have to transport them from Mountain View to Huntsville. I think it's the day before. And I've been set up at the command post, you know, taking waypoints and stuff like that over the phone or over the radio. That's the closest I've been.
Interesting. Is that kind of like they use a certain people every time, or is that like kind of like the World Series when they bring in the umps from different places to all, or is that a set crew that always does that kind of stuff?
I think that's a set crew. They're all volunteers.
Okay.
All right. Nice. Except for maybe the supervisors, but other than that, it's the same people.
Gotcha. Now, prior to the escape, an anonymous informant, we said, you know, called the governor and told somebody about a plan of the escape. And, you know, I think that was definitely a very interesting, you know, angle to this because, you know, I didn't think that that had happened originally and then found that out after watching some of that. I know that we've talked about it. The state of Virginia definitely didn't fuck around. I mean, they started executing these guys one after the other. They start with Linwood Briley only a few months later in October of 1984, followed by James in the April of 85, Earl Clanton April of 1988, Derek Peterson, August of 91, Willie Jones, September of 92, and the last of the six, old Lem Tuggle, Joey. He's the last of the Mohegans there. He's executed December of 1996. So definitely, you know, one way to keep them from thinking of escaping again, Joey, put him to death, you know.
I mean, you got a combined total of 17 deaths. Jeffrey Dahmer's like, hey, 1978, I'm going to kill my first one, and I'm going to do 17 myself and also die about the same time. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
That's weird. Like,
It is. Now, Tex, when something like this happens, you know, we talked about this when we've done these others, authorities look over the details to try to learn from their mistakes. And what did you learn about what happened after this? I know you said even in Texas, you guys make adjustments when you hear about other escape attempts or escapes in other places, but what did they learn from Mecklenburg?
Well, you know, there's always going to be a scapegoat. So they had all their scapegoats.
Right.
They changed up. So death row, got put on work details, you know, idle hands make devil's playground.
Right.
Thing with education, they put in a lot of educational programs, better training for the staff. And they also took that POS prison that they had.
that's all right.
And they changed it from a maximum to a like a transfer facility.
Right.
Where, you know, the inmates were only there for a certain amount of time, and then they went
before they went to their permanent. Right. Right.
Right.
Right.
But yeah, that place was not a very good setup as far as the layout of it anyway.
Is that what it was about it you didn't like, was the way they had it set up?
I think so. I looked at the blueprints, and there was a lot of blind spots, and the staff restroom that the dude was hiding in.
Right,
yeah.
They had done it several times, and nobody ever thought, you know, to say anything about it, but that goes to training too. So, you
right.
know. Yeah.
That's very interesting. I know the Department of Corrections was forced to resign. The warden of the prison, Gary Bass, said that a series of lawsuits against the staff had lowered the morale, and which was part led to the escape. And he's quoted as saying, quote, the staff felt the prison was being run by the ACLU, end quote. So, you know, obviously that stuff's kind of percolating in the distance, Tex. I'm sure that didn't help.
Yeah, something to be said about that is the staff felt the prison was being run by the ACLU.
Yeah.
There's a reason that was. There was a lot of beatings and all kind of stuff that went on that shouldn't have.
Right.
So they were, you know, they were being overseen.
Gotcha.
That fucking sucks.
Yeah, for sure. They tried to close Mecklenburg in 93, but it did remain open. And then, like you said, Tex, it went to a medium security you know, short-term type facility. Death Row's moved out in 1997 to Sussex Prison. It was closed in 2012, demolished in 2013. And I read the last thing I saw is the property is now zoned for industrial use. I don't know if they've built anything it yet. But
I just want to say I've said that to some chicks before. You want some sex?
So I was just going to ask you if you wanted to add anything to this story. So that's apparently what you got.
That's it.
Tex, any final thoughts on this one? I mean, you think they learned anything here?
Yeah, just need to train the people better, pay the people, and make sure that they know, you know, everybody, that there's no idle hands in the prison.
Right.
Education, and jobs. Give people something to do.
Yeah.
And treat people with respect. That's
right.
It.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good that's a good summary of what should be going on. The research I did for this one was done with a few documentaries that I did find on YouTube about the escape. Not a ton of stuff out there. I was kind of surprised I didn't see any podcasts about it. So it's kind of cool. Apparently we're the first one.
Documentaries is basically, and reading what I could on the internet.
Yeah, there were some good newspaper articles.
Tex got firsthand accounts of this shit, though.
Yeah,
holy shit,
Tex,
bro.
Having that tie... of that was very, very interesting, and we definitely enjoy doing these kind of episodes. Now, Chris, next week we're going to be doing a little change. We had our plan of what we were going to do,
yeah,
and we kind of talked because, you know, with all this shit going on with this coronavirus,
we're doing the Black Death, yo.
Yeah, we're doing the fucking Black Plague. We're doing that next week. We thought, why not? Yeah, what do you think, Joey?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Good time
in the hearts of the minions.
So nothing like talking about a plague in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah, so. So, Tex, definitely thanks for shedding some light on this one with us. It's always good to have you on. I definitely think CK is getting ready.
Sugar choo-choo.
Getting all fucking jazzed up. So, Tex, why don't you help us close out this segment by letting us know what we need to fucking do right now.
Let's get our fucking metal on!
Known the world over as the master of metal, the crusher of posers, and Murder Metal Mayhem's knower of all things metal, hailing from Wild Man Street in Danbury, Connecticut, standing at 6 feet of brutal, punishing madness, weighing in at 220 pounds of poser pulverization, the one, the only, toughest bastard on the planet, Chris C.K. Kovacs!
Fuck yeah.
The great metal motherfucker.
Thank
Got
you.
CK, what's going on, dude? You know, I'm at the more I think about it, I think Crysix needs to ask you if they can continue to play that song.
That's fucking funny. I should trademark that shit.
We do need to reach out to those guys and be like, hey, hey, we've been using this, but we credit them all the time. I'm sure they would be cool about it.
It's like
all
CK Norris.
Yeah.
I take your song and it's mine.
Of course, you hear Joey Gormonger still over here hanging out with us in Horns High.
How we doing, CK?
Always good times when he's here.
Yeah, always have a good time.
Definitely. So anxious to get into some metal tonight. Got some good stuff we're going to talk about, CK. And in the intro, I mentioned that the old school is the way tonight, and the young guys need to take some fucking notes because you're going to get old school on them. So
yeah,
doomies.
These guys go way back, man.
Going back to the band Trouble, who's from your area?
Yeah, Chicago,
you know, Chicago area.
Yep.
I believe it's Aurora.
Hold on. Can I stop you for a second?
Sure. Go ahead. You stepped in it, CK.
Please.
Go ahead.
Ahead, my name is Wayne Campbell, and I live in Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago.
Yeah.
Excellent. I had to do it, bro.
Yeah.
I had to do it.
So they're from Aurora then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they always said like they were from Chicago.
A southwest suburb of Chicago.
Oh, right, yeah. I had to do it. Sorry, dude.
That's all right. They formed in 79. And at that time, they were like one of the few bands who were doing the genre, the doomy type stuff. At that time, it was only Candlemass and St. Vitus that actually had anything as far as record label deals. Pentagram was around, but they really didn't get their first deal until mid-80s. So it was basically Trouble, Candlemass, and St. Vitus at the time. Obviously, a big influence on them was Black Sabbath. Early 80s, like 80, 81, they were signed to Metal Blade. And Metal Blade gave them this tag, which they hated. And it was kind of, if you think about it, it's kind of stupid. They termed them white metal.
Wait, what?
Yeah, what's up with that?
White, because everything was so dark and black metal.
Okay,
they gave them the term.
So you're going to make us racist. Awesome.
White metal, because they're trying to give them the tag that they were Christian, and the band fucking hated it.
Right. Oh, I understand. That'd be fucked up, dude.
I mean, they said they were, no, they spoke of positive messages, but they weren't a religious band. They didn't want to be tagged a religious band.
That's fucking crazy. White metal.
Yeah, that just sounds awful, man.
Like straight.
It was one of those things that Brian Slagle, not one of Brian Slagle's better ideas, let's put it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, for sure.
They were signed like in 82, 83, I believe, to Metal Blade. 84, they put out Psalm 9, which at the time was a departure from anything else released, because obviously 84 was the start of thrash metal. So you have a band with a doomy sound, a Black Sabbath type sound, putting out an album. And it was kind of out of their element.
They just couldn't keep up, bro.
But, you know, it was a little cleansing of the palate at the same time, because, you know, you're getting a flux of all these thrash bands and speed metal. It was kind of cool to hear a band that kind of went
kept
back
it kind
a little.
Of slower tempo.
Yeah. You know, and at that time, the band, for the most part, this was what the members that were pretty much part of the band up until 84-85 was Eric Wagner, Bruce Franklin, Rick Wartell, Sean McAllister, and Jeff Olsen on drums. You know, they got their name out there with what was titled Trouble, but it's also known as Psalm 9. Because I believe on the bottom of the original album was had Psalm 9, but it was actually Trouble self-titled. Then the year after, they released a much better album, The Skull. A step above Psalm 9. Still the same genre, getting into that doomy shit. Still the same members at the time. Great album. Then they were putting out albums 84, 85, and I believe 87 was Into the Light, which a lot of people didn't like for some reason, but I thought it was a great album. I thought they were turning a corner as far as better songs.
Yeah, songs, but you know how people are when it's something different than what they've heard.
When you change something different. I mean, they were getting better as songwriters. The hooks were a little bit better. The songs were a little bit more memorable. And then
it's kind of like how people were when Whitechapel just did that album a little while ago where he did the clean vocals and shit.
Yeah.
People did not like that at all.
I didn't like it at first either, but the album's great.
Right? Is that The Valley?
The Valley, yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe 85 was when I saw Trouble the first time. I believe you were at the same show, Pete, when they opened for King Diamond.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
Which was a weird combination, but
yeah, for sure.
It was a great show regardless. And I actually met Trouble afterwards. They're really cool guys.
Very cool.
And I asked Eric Wagner at the time, I said, "Are you a Christian, man?" Because at the time you didn't, that's what you were told, and you know, they really didn't say anything otherwise because they didn't want to go against Metal Blade or piss off Brian Slagle. He goes, "No, we're not a Christian band. We're just like to sing about positive things."
That's, you know, fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's their thing.
Then they were on a little hiatus for 3 years. Rumor was that they were getting signed. Rick Rubin loved these guys, and Rubin wanted to sign them to Def Jam, which later he had his own label, obviously Def American.
Right.
Then American Records. They left the Def out. And I believe they were either like the second or third band that were signed. Obviously, Slayer was the first band. I think the Black Crowes were after them. Then I think Trouble was the third band signed to the label. So, you know, he thought really highly of these guys.
Were the Beastie Boys on there?
No, they were on...
That was Def Jam.
That was Jeff Jam. Okay, not America. Def Jam, okay, yeah. All right.
Which he had a part in that, of course.
Right, of course. Yeah, I just...
Actually, the Beastie Boys were on Def Jam for one album, and the second album, they were signed to Capitol.
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense.
And in 1990, 3 years later, they put out this self-titled Trouble album on Def American. Supposedly, Rick Rubin produced it, but I heard that was bullshit. He just liked to put his name as a credit as producer on a lot of things.
Well, when you get that name that like that, you just like,
that
fuck
legacy
it.
Of
they want your name on
shit.
There, you know. Yeah. It sounds good.
Black Crowes actually fucking ousted him out on that one, because I guess on the first album, when it originally came out, it had him not even on the credits. And when they got popular, the second pressing of the CD had him as executive producer.
Oh, nice.
So, you know. But from what I heard, it was just Rick Rubin and name, and really the band produced the album.
Oh.
But it was a fucking amazing album. They took the doominess, kind of sped it up a tad, and added a little bit of psychedelia to it. So, you know, it was just a fucking great album. And after 3 years, I remember when that came out in 1990, I constantly just played that album over and over and over. I liked it so much. You know, then in 2 years later, I actually saw them on that tour as well. I forgot, they opened for somebody. I can't remember who it was, but
isn't it weird that you can remember them playing, but you can't remember who they opened for? How weird is that? Like, I came to see this band. I don't care who's fucking the headliner. Like, I came to see this.
I went for the headliner too. I just can't remember. It might have been Overkill,
right?
I couldn't fucking tell you.
It's just so many shows within your lifetime. After mixed up. I don't know where the fuck I was at.
After 600 shows, it's like a few just are just like it's.
It would have been nice to log in, you know, like every show you went to. That'd be so cool to have that, you know. Of course, you don't think of that shit at the time.
If we had the internets back then like we do today, it'd be like, got that shit on the cloud, son.
I mean, you could probably go back and find out who they played with, but it might have been Overkill. I can't fucking remember.
Right.
92, they put out their second album for Def American, Manic Frustration. Another great album, supposedly produced by Rick Rubin. Again, heard otherwise that it was just name only. But again, another great fucking album. Unfortunately, that album didn't do as well as as the self-titled for Def American. And as the record business has it, they were dropped after that. Took a couple years off, signed with Century Media, and put out Plastic Greenhead, which is picks up where basically where Trouble, Manic Frustration was going. Same vibe. The doomy psychedelia vibe.
Now, and, when you say Plastic Greenhead, I'm sorry to interrupt once again, but when you say Plastic Greenhead, I feel like Sick Rick needs to make a mask of Reanimator with the fucking...
Oh, nice.
Dude.
Yeah, Reanimator would be badass.
Dude.
But that would be sick.
In green? Cool. Yeah, that'd so Rick, cool if you're mask. Listening, check that out.
Yeah, make, Rick.
Like, check that shit out. that'd be fucking awesome.
And at that time, the those three albums, the original drummer left, and he had, I think it was Barry, his name Barry Stern from another band out of Chicago, Sotrope. He played with them. And in 95, Eric Wagner left, and 1996-97, Kyle Thomas from Exhorter took over lead vocals. Even though at that time there was nothing recorded with him. Used the vocals for a couple years. Then Corey Clark from the band Warrior Soul, another band from your area, which at that time was a band with a little, which was kind of, I guess, marching to be their own drummer. Band I'll probably end up doing at some point for a segment, but Corey Clark was the vocalist, I believe, from like 2008 to 2012, or I'm sorry, in 2007, let me go back, Eric Wagner came back and they released Simple Minded Condition on a label called Escaping Music, and they went back to more of the doomy sound, less of the psychedelic sound. And this album is as heavy as fuck.
But I like mushrooms, bro.
After being away for 12 years, they put out an album that was just really killer. And then Eric Wagner left again, and that's when Corey Clark came in from 2008-2012 as a singer. Didn't release anything on vinyl or on tape. But basically he played live with them. Then in 2012, he left and Kyle Thomas came back from Exhorter, the lead singer from Exhorter. And, they released a Distortion Field in 2013, with Kyle Thomas. Awesome album. And as of right now, that's the last thing they released. They haven't had anything else after that. Supposedly they're still together. Kyle Thomas is still listed as the lead singer. Supposedly they're going to record something again soon. Meanwhile, Eric Wagner has had a couple bands he's been in. A band called Blackfinger that released two albums.
Blackfinger was on the same label as Low 12. We were on Dark Star Records together. Which is a Chicago label. But yeah, Eric's band was on there. I remember playing, I think, the single off of that when I had my Heavycore radio show. So that's a funny coincidence.
Yeah, then he went on to form a band called The Skull.
Yeah.
And that's the band he's in as of this moment right now. Like I said, as far as I know, Kyle Thomas is still listed as the vocalist, even though he's out touring with Exhorter.
Because Exhorter is fucking awesome.
Yeah, they got that new album. I mean,
they're both awesome bands.
I haven't heard The Skull at all, so I have to definitely check that out. I don't know.
It's the same vibe as Trouble. You know, doomy. Really good shit. It's really good stuff.
A little sludgier.
Both. A little sludgier. Blackfinger and The Skull, you know, both those bands are in the same vibe as Trouble.
All right.
You know, hopefully they're going to come out with another album soon, because the Distortion Field is really a good album. I really enjoyed that album a lot. We'll see what happens.
Awesome.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Awesome. Now, CK, you got a lost classic for us tonight, don't you?
Yes.
One of those ones you just dig up out of that that room of yours, that never-ending fucking pit of fucking CDs and DVDs.
Dude, you got...
The one that almost swallowed me up whole that time I stayed there.
Pete about fell on his head.
I got to take a picture and show you because ever
I bet you... Dude, you're ridiculous.
Has it gotten worse?
You're a fucking music whore.
Well, I was in the process of
in this coronavirus. In the process, though. Yeah, in this coronavirus, everybody needs music. Why are you taking it all?
I'm such a dick. I was in the process before I went in the hospital in August of reorganizing everything, and that's when I got sick, and it's just been like such an I've just been adding shit and haven't. I haven't had the
oh my god
the strength. Well,
no, I understand.
But you have the strength to open those fucking boxes though from Amazon.
Oh, you bet your ass.
But your ass, I did. I got that shit in the mail, man.
That's funny. So who's your classic, dude?
The lost classic is a band called Morgoth out of Germany. They were early 90s, and they kind of had, they were a German death metal band, but they kind of sound like a German version of Fear Factory.
Oh shit. I've never.
Yeah, and they had.
Why do I feel like they played at the Canopy Club? Or not the Canopy, but Lafayette Club.
Oh no, they definitely didn't play there. But okay. Morgoth was
I mean, they're still around. Yeah. They just put out an album in 2015, they're still around. But the album that I really dig by them is an album that was released by Century Media called Feel Sorry for the Fanatic.
Hell yeah.
Which I believe is still available. I believe it's been re-released. But I don't think too many people have heard of this band. And if you get a chance, I believe it's you could stream it too.
Dude, I remember listening to these guys when I was in high school because of Cashman.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I had a...
Like, because of
they
Cashman.
They put out, like, their first two demos together, Resurrection Absurd and Female Infanticide, I believe. But,
I think those are re-released on a CD.
Right, but, like, when I was growing up back in... I mean, this is probably 91, like, right after it came out. That was... I had that tape, and it was probably the first tape I ever owned with growling vocals.
With some kind of guttural
shit. And the
artwork
on it was very influential to me, right, too. They did some really badass shit, but to me, it's like a masterpiece of death metal. Like, they got songs like Pits of Itumino.
Yeah, they were a great band.
Yeah,
they are a great
melodic
band,
too. Like, if you like Gorguts style stuff, I think I would equate them kind of like to that.
Okay. That's a good one, CK.
I know they're fucking badass, dude.
But that's my lost classic, and I'll have another one for you guys next week, of course.
I can't remember. I might be wrong about this, but Morgoth might even have been like Century Media's first release, like actual.
It might have been one of the first bands.
Interesting.
The funny thing is the first time I ever heard of Century Media was when they put out the Third Cro-Mag CD.
Oh, nice! Yeah.
That's and that funny. Was like 1990, 91.
That's like crazy.
So Morgoth may have been one of the first, definitely within like the top two or three signings that they probably had for America.
Cro-Mags would be a pretty decent one for you to do.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I love the Cro-Mags. I love the Cro-Mags.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Now I'll tell you, you know, we've been talking about this 666 club and that these people need to join this shit, Joey, and you know, they get the exclusive content, VIP, right. patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem, $3 a month, man. That's nothing. CK for some VIP access, man. They get the show.
Like I say, just go to your change drawer.
Right.
You know, if you have to, go to a fucking Coinstar. Get the $3
bills. Cash that shit in.
We white trash it around this bitch.
Put it in your bank account. Put it in your bank account. Use your debit card or PayPal or whatever you use and get it.
That's right. $3 a month. Get VIP access, and we're going to be doing some exclusive content that you'll only be able to hear on Patreon. So you definitely want to get it.
It's not going to be something that we just like randomly put out later in the years.
No.
Like, It's the only way you get it. Hail Satan.
Yeah, that's the only way is to get on Patreon.
Hail and the Almighty.
Join that 666 Club. National metal news, CK, you got any releases you wanted to mention?
There's really nothing coming out. Next, I think this Friday is the releases of the last four Dio CDs and albums, in deluxe editions.
Okay.
New Havoc is coming out, I believe, in
April. Playing a song tonight, Phantom Force. It's fucking badass.
New Warbringer is also coming out in April.
Oh, those are the guys that didn't send me my shirt, man. I'm not going to bring that
son
up.
Son of a bitches.
God damn it.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Fuck.
And,
got PTSD over that shit. You know how I am with shirts, man.
That's what started the coronavirus, Pete, not getting a damn shirt.
You sure you don't have it? No. You sure you don't have it and it's just misplaced?
No. No.
They're obviously not war sender.
No. Not war sender.
God damn, dude.
I've done that shit with CDs, you know.
Yeah, thought you didn't get it. No, I was looking for it, and yeah, they were. It was just bad, so I don't want to bring it up, but you know, I heard you say it. It brought back my PTSD over the whole issue. So.
Unfortunately, we have some sad news.
Sacred Reich.
Jason Rainey from Sacred Oath, original founding member.
Sacred Reich?
I was Sacred Reich. Sorry. Shit.
Yeah, I said fuck. Sacred Reich.
Oh, shit.
That's all right.
Disregard that. Disregard that. Sacred Reich passed away from a heart attack.
Yeah.
I guess he had some health issues.
Yeah, that's sad, man. Young, very young to have that happen. 53, I think it was.
53.
Yeah, that's how old I am. So it's kind of scary.
I'm not too far behind you.
Don't die, Pete.
Yeah, that's true. You're right behind me, CK. Well, definitely.
That fucking really weird. Hey, CK. I want to tell you a joke that I got from my daughter.
Oh no.
Yeah, this is kind of special.
Yeah, this is special. So. You know why the aborted fetus is so smart?
Why?
Because she wasn't born yesterday.
Oh, God.
Yeah, got that from my daughter.
Just, oh, shit.
That's a nice father-daughter moment there.
Oh, that's a good one. You're in trouble.
I know, right?
Now, her Joey, you got a big show coming up, the Heart of Illinois.
Yeah.
You want to talk about what's going on with that, dude?
I will, but real fast, I wanted to ask CK real quick. CK, you listen to Beneath the Massacre?
The what?
Beneath the Massacre.
I tell you the truth, I think I have a couple of CDs from them, but I'm not.
They're fucking brutal, bro.
They were a band that was hit or miss with me for a long time. Like, I like some of their stuff, but not so much of the other, you know? But they just released an album, like, in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I just
saw
they just released an album after a couple of years.
Dude, and that shit is fucking heavy.
No,
that's
it's heavy
as fuck.
I was curious
if you had heard that. You might dig it.
I'll have to go on.
I'll have to check that out.
I'll have to go stream it before I.
Yeah.
I'll probably end
before
up
you commit. No,
yeah.
But dude, no, it's like different, not in a bad way from what they've done before,
yeah,
dude.
No, it's definitely.
It's just
more
like
brutal.
It just slams so hard, dude. It's heavy as fuck.
Nice.
But So I was curious. We were listening to it. I was like, I wonder if CK heard this.
Yeah, I remember Meister turned me on to those guys. They're really heavy.
Right.
Oh, but no, I said, I remember sending Meister fucking. Or giving him a fucking burnt CD back in the day or some shit. He's like, I need more of that, dude. Like, yeah, Beneath the Mask is fucking just
violent.
Yeah,
that's the thing with all the fucking all the shit I have. I can't remember sometimes what I do.
Right.
Have.
Right.
Dude.
Oh, I could see that.
I've seen pictures, bro.
I've done it with books before, so.
Oh,
sure.
You literate.
You know, I'll be like,
this literate motherfucker over here fucking picking his teeth all nonchalant like, hey, sup? I read.
Now, Joey, did you want to talk about your Heart of Illinois show?
Yeah. So, of course, like, you know, with everything that's going on right now in the fucking world losing its goddamn mind.
Fucking right.
Everything's somewhat up in the air.
Right.
But
hey, do you guys have limits on gatherings and shit.
Yeah.
All the bars and restaurants are locked down.
Illinois is pretty bad.
Yeah, they closed them here, too.
Yeah.
It's only takeout only.
Wow.
Yep.
I actually just got back. I went to Daytonian Death Fest in Ohio this weekend and got to enjoy myself that Saturday, and then Ohio shut down the very next day, basically, all their stuff. So that could have been the last thing I got to do for a while, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's wow. just
But I am glad I got to do that. But anyway, with Heart of Illinois Fest coming up, though, that's still May 9th. I mean, we're all hoping, you know, that all this stuff might be behind us by then. And
May 9th, baby.
If not, you know, I'll try to reschedule. It's mostly a bunch of friends, so we could probably figure it out. But anyway, as of right now, May 9th, Forest, Illinois, 13 bands, $5. Some good bands, Virulent Excision, Bill Nye, Crotch Ripper, of course, Abhorrent.
Inebriated.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really good time. I'm going to have the Murder Metal Mayhem guys out.
Fuck yeah.
Got you guys slated for two segments, not so late, because we know how Chris gets, but that'll be good. But
are you still doing your Britney Fox tribute band?
Oh man, and I should. I definitely should. I'll tell you what. I'll bring something up at Daytonian Death Fest, and a big reason that, you know, I went out there with
bring them on. Whatever,
but one of the biggest, you know, draws was Cunt Torch was supposed to play that show.
Oh,
that
okay.
was his last one that he that had was Ryan's booked. Last so show. During that time period, while he played, we put up a banner for him, and we just played Cunt Torch songs.
Oh, cool.
And everybody moshed around, and some guys
dancing
got
to Cunt Torch. Dude.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
It,
so
nice.
I wasn't there, but yeah.
Yeah, it was super awesome. I think for Heart of Illinois, since that was the last time some of the other people got to see him too, we'll do something for him out there.
Sure.
We'll tribute.
That's very cool.
So, yeah, anyhow, so Heart of Illinois still May 9th. I mean, it's going on
May
until
9th.
Further
awesome.
Notice.
That's awesome. Now, Chris, you were at the show Sunday night at Daddy-O's in Bloomington, Illinois.
Fucking fun. I'm
said it was badass.
Like Summon the Lich. They was playing, dude.
They were heavy, weren't
what
they?
Was it Summon the Dick?
Yeah. God damn it. Why are you always making me sucking dicks, bro? Fuck. This is bullshit, dude. Just because we got the same name, you suck dick too. But yeah, no.
Not lately.
Maybe yesterday. I don't know.
But it was a good show, though.
But yeah, no, the show was fucking awesome, man. Like I said, Summoning the Lich, they fucking tore it up. Dude.
Where were they from?
St. Louis, right?
Oh,
yeah,
St. Louis.
Oh,
cool,
yeah.
Cool. How was Chalk with the new guys?
Chalk with the new guys is pretty fucking awesome, dude. Like,
nice.
The new drummer is fucking awesome. He's got foot, like, on the double kicks, like a monster, dude.
Nice.
Singer
does
the
new growling.
Vocalist, like, his gutturals are intense.
Oh,
and he's
wow.
actually, like, put videos on, like, saying, here's what I, like, instructional video. I don't want to say
okay.
instructional videos. But, like,
oh, wow.
he's got videos on YouTube. Like,
doing vocal covers.
Yeah, not necessarily vocal. I guess it would be instructional because he explains, like, this is what I do. I breathe in this way. And then I do
wow.
this certain thing with my tongue and my diaphragm pushes. And like no, he straight puts instruction. I guess it is instructional. Fuck. But...
Make up your fucking mind.
Man, fuck off, dude. But no, the show was great. Blood Feud fucking tore shit up.
Awesome.
Eyes From Above was the first time I ever heard them in general, let alone see them.
Yeah.
They were fucking awesome, dude. They, which also, Eyes From Above, their drummer is Chalk's new vocalist.
Okay.
So, like, he was double teaming tonight. Plus, while he's playing drums in Eyes From Above, he's doing vocals as well.
Oh, wow.
So
busy motherfuckers.
Yeah, it is pretty intense. It was a good night.
That's
plenty
cool. You said
there.
The crowd was there.
Yeah, the crowd was there. It was a good time.
And they got another one coming up too.
As
but
long
maybe
as they,
not though with the bars.
April
yeah.
26th. I believe it's April 26th.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And it's Event of Collapse is headlining, Treachery Untold's playing. And I apologize to anyone, but I can't remember offhand. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah.
That's technically my next show is April 4th, your wedding day.
Your wedding
that
day.
That night. But
no,
I
no,
highly
no.
doubt.
I was talking about the next one at Daddy's.
No, I know, and I'm saying my next show is technically the April 4th show.
Oh.
In Anarga.
That's, I highly see that's that being doubtful, up in the air right now. But, yeah. You know, until they tell us
you
no,
never
that's
know.
Still on.
So. You never know. So, very cool. Well, I think, guys, we've done plenty of metal tonight. CK, you're going to stick around with us into Mayhem, you said,
fuck
right?
Yeah.
So, why don't
I got,
you?
I got a couple quick stories.
Nice. Awesome, awesome. Nice. So,
do they got to do a poop?
No.
Fuck!
It has to do with my medical issues, though.
Oh, boy. Well, CK, why don't you tell the listeners what we're going to be fucking doing next, man?
I'm going to be doing some fucking meme, motherfuckers. Put man's life in your hands. You're a cold blooded killer. You must be insane.
Do you find yourself getting pissed at shit for no goddamn motherfucking reason? Do you ever want to just kill a bitch?
God damn it, you fucking bitch.
Here at Benoit Anger Management, we can help you out when you're about ready to fucking snap. Let one of our life coaches help you through that shit, motherfucker.
I told you to shut the fuck up.
Call us at 800-GOT-RAGE, and we'll talk you down off that ledge and teach you how to get that
God
shit in control
it.
Before you kill everybody in your fucking
whore.
Family. Benoit Anger Management can fucking help.
Shut the fuck up!
Jesus Christ, man.
I just want to punch myself in the dick when I hear that.
I that just is want so you fucking know awful, man.
Benoit Management can fucking help, dude.
Yeah, that was narrated by you, Chris,
yeah,
and my
you
son
and
Joe
son
doing
yeah,
the
yeah.
screaming and shit in the background. Real
you can't just
proud
just
fucking father moment
dick.
There.
That's not right, bro.
Well, we are in Mayhem, guys. It's a good place to be.
Hell yeah.
We played some Trouble before that. The song Assassin, that was cool. Good to talk to you, CK, about the band Trouble and having you back for
some
stories, fucking
right?
Some stories to tell in Mayhem,
yeah,
man.
I got some two quick ones.
All right.
Cool. Let's
so why don't you go, man?
The first one goes back to when I first got cancer and I had my original operation remove the tumor when I was given like the 1% chance to fucking live.
Yeah.
1%. That's fucked.
Yeah. But I guess when I had the operation, they told my wife I was going to be like out of it for a while, going in and out of consciousness and all this shit. Well, I guess after when I was in the room where you recuperate before you go up to your room.
Right.
I woke right up.
And you don't remember it?
I remember some things. Like, I remember, like, the story I'm telling you, I remember it.
I drink a lot of booze. I know that feeling.
I remember going up to my room, and it was either the day after or a couple days after. I kept on ringing the fucking bell for the nurse because I wanted something to drink, and I couldn't drink anything because I had a tube going down my throat through my nose.
Been
and
there.
And they kept on telling me, you can't drink anything yet. You can't eat anything yet. And I was constantly pushing it, and the nurse would come, and I'd say, I need something to drink. They're like, no, you can't have it. So you'll be able to have it soon. So I guess they took my wife aside. They said, he's a nice guy, but you need him to tell him to stop having us paid for getting something to drink. You can't have it. So my wife comes, and she goes, stop ringing the fucking bell. I think they're going to fucking kill you.
Damn.
If you ask one more
just
time
stop,
for something, for water or something to drink. I remember going, okay. And I fucking ring the bell.
I got you. Ding, ding, bitches.
Like, yes. I'm like, can I have something to drink?
Wow.
And I just kept it. I mean, eventually I was able to get some drink, but I guess I was being a pain in the ass.
Whatever happens to the best of us. Like, dude, let's give me some ice chips or some shit, bro.
No, he gave me that. That was the only thing I could have.
Yeah. It's ice chips? Hell yeah.
Fuck that. That sucks.
I just want a fucking goddamn Mountain Dew or something, dude.
And the second story was after one of my other operations. I think it was the last one I had in 2016, it might have been. I guess they did an epidural when I had the operation on my last tumor when they took it out of my stomach. I remember waking up in the recovery room, and I go, I'm fucking paralyzed.
I can't fucking move, damn, man.
I can't move my legs. Like, Mr. Kovacs, you okay? I go, I'm paralyzed.
I can't.
It's like, no, it's the epidural. I go, no, I'm paralyzed.
No, you don't understand. I can't
move
shit.
And I'm still fucked up on the drugs. I go, no, I'm paralyzed. They're like, no, you're not. I go, where's my wife? They're like, she's in the waiting room. I go, I need her to tell me I'm not paralyzed.
I need her to let me know.
Oh, damn.
Chris, so, you're not paralyzed. Thanks.
So they have to go and get my wife because I'm freaking out. I'm like, I'm paralyzed. I can't move my legs. And they go and get her, and she's freaking out. I'm like, you know, why are you getting me? What happened? They're like, he's freaking out because he can't move his legs yet. And he won't believe us unless you say it. So she comes, she goes, what's up? I go, I'm paralyzed. She goes, no, you're not. I go, yeah, I am. I can't move away. She goes, no, you're not. It's the epidural. I go, you sure? She goes, yeah, I'm fucking sure. You're not paralyzed.
Could be it's stupid.
I don't think you're right. I said, I think I'm paralyzed. I go, we got problems.
That's fucking hilarious.
Wow.
Next thing I know is they're giving me, like, they must have gave me, like, morphine or something to put me out.
Those are the things I wish that she had, like, recorded. Like, you know, you see those kids out getting their fucking wisdom teeth pulled.
Right.
Coming out of the anesthesia like, dude, I wish she had got video of that because that would be great.
Oh, God, I wish. That shit would have been funny.
Yeah, that would have been funny. Well, very good, CK. Always good to have some mayhem from you. Joey, did you have any?
I got a quick one if you want one.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of I've told this one to Chris. He likes this story. Yeah. So,
all right.
You know, I don't get sick very often. I don't go to the doctors very often. But back in like 2003 or 2004, I'm at work and all of a sudden I just fucking dropped to the ground. My fucking stomach hurting. And it was a kidney stone. But I had no idea at the time. And so I'm fucking freaking out. And that shit hurt. So, but that's, to me, the worst pain I've ever felt, you know.
Right.
I thought my fucking appendix was going to burst or something, you know. So, anyway. So, I mean, literally, I'm at a cash register working at Tom and Jerry's in DeKalb. Fucking boom, to the ground. I just stand up. I look at the customer. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know what that was, you know. And then it happens again. So, I crawl over and I got my phone sitting there. It's old Nextel, you know.
Yeah. Right, right. It's chirp to talk.
Right. And this is whenever I first met and this was hanging out with Texas Dave, who was fucking
Texas Dave
of Sin Worm, oily on discharge.
Tell some of these damn stories.
Yeah, Texas Dave, he's just a ton of stories. So this motherfucker's crazy. But anyway, I call him because he's the only person I can get a hold of to come get me because I'm just in pain. So he does. He picks me up, go back to my apartment because I'm still not wanting to go to the doctors and stuff because, you know, that costs money, no insurance,
right.
And I don't know what's wrong with me. So I'm like, let me go home, go to the bathrooms, you know, see if something's wrong there.
Sure.
So I'm in the fucking...
Did you have to fart?
I didn't know. I mean, it was just so much pressure and pain, you know? So I'm in the bathroom. I'm living up on the top story of a duplex, and... finally, I'm at the point where I'm like, no, this isn't what's going on. I'm in fucking pain. So I fucking come out of the bathroom. Texas Dave, nowhere to be found. I'm fucking looking for this guy. I'm like, I want to go to the hospital. So I fucking, I'm crawling down my steps to the first fucking, to the ground level because it's so much pain.
Dude, having kidney stones, I could totally relate to the pain is fucking awful.
Dude,
man.
It was fucking just treacherous.
I had gallstones. Those are probably like the same as kidney stones.
But anyway, so I fucking come crawling out this motherfucker, and sure enough, there he comes. He fucking comes pulling up in his goddamn pickup truck. That motherfucker went to the liquor store to go get some beer because
I'm in pain over here. I might need to go. I gotta go get booze,
dude. Of course he did. That motherfucker went to go get some booze.
Texas Dave.
Yeah, he just pulls up while I'm crawling on the ground and just opens the door, smiling with a fucking, you know, case of beer. And we do. I was like, okay, but yeah. So you know, for St. Patrick's Day, good drinking tale.
There you go. No, that's awesome, dude. That's hilarious.
Did he at least take you to the doctor?
He did. He took me to the doctor. And, you know, I got the man. That I was in there just fucking crying, like, why won't you people fucking do something to help me? And, you know, it takes a while for they can figure out what they can
process
do, but,
everything and all
dude,
that shit. Yeah.
You know, I got through that, but after that, I definitely watched like soda intake, and I think drinking beer a lot back then too was
right.
I ain't never had no damn kidney stone.
Dude, you drink so much whiskey, you destroy all that shit.
Well, guys, we've got week two of the March Mayhem contest. I'm definitely psyched for this.
That's the only
sports
going on right
now. The only event still.
Only event not canceled is the March Mayhem contest. Somebody,
I'm in good shape with this.
I had a couple of people comment and said, thank God that this is still going on. Right? Like, I've got something to look forward to. That's awesome.
Goddamn fucking... DraftKings and shit should get up on this.
Yeah, there you go. So we're going to mention the listeners again that we're playing for. Chris, you're going to be playing for Stephanie from Toledo, Ohio, right?
Yes, sir.
And CK, you have been playing for Justin from Lexington, Illinois. And both of you guys, your listeners have been cheering you on Facebook. Like so that's
dude.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I saw that.
And Steven from Chicago is who I play for. So this is still those three and will be those three all the way to the end of the month until we finish the scoring. But right now, you know, it's hard to tell because it's the matches are still going on. The first prize is, of course, a co-hosting spot on Murder Metal Mayhem with a murder segment with us. So
with
it's going to be cool.
We'll let you choose.
Yeah. And we've got prizes for second and third place, too. So everybody gets good prizes.
Yeah, everybody
shirts
gets something
and
no matter what.
The new
so
book and
good.
Stickers and all kinds of cool stuff. So, all right. Now, Chris, the temperature right now.
Yeah, not my battery power.
That's right.
Because if I looked at my battery power right now,
yeah,
it'd be hot because my battery's at 100%. So we'd
oh,
be
damn.
Fucked.
Be fucking hot.
100 degrees in the coronavirus epidemic. Fucking ridiculous. But yeah, we are at, oh, shit, 37 degrees.
All right. So 37 is an odd number. So odd number is the first number, so or the first name in the match. So... Oh, last shit. Week it was the second. This week it's the first. So
my number one is still in.
Okay.
Oh
right.
Shit.
But my two and three got knocked out.
Ah, so we've got the first match was Richard Speck
and Henry Lucas.
And Henry Lee Lucas. So Richard Speck wins that one. So
Panzram H.H. Holmes. That makes a whole lot of sense.
That
right
does.
Now.
A Panzram still in
like,
it.
You ain't fucking me. I'm fucking you.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think H.H. Holmes stood a chance up against Carl Panzram.
No. Hold on.
And then Eileen Wuornos and Arthur Shawcross. I mean, Eileen fucking tough, I mean, man.
She's a fucking road bitch, dude. She'll fucking kill your ass. So, I mean, I could see that.
Right? And then what do you think, Joey, with Albert Fish and Belle Gunness? Albert Fish, how does he win?
I mean, the dude is so fucking old and decrepit. You can't really imagine. Belle Gunness, she was
a hefty fucking
woman.
She's
a big old horse of a girl.
So I would have to say that I would go with Belle, but
but that's
but
the
Fish
winner
wins.
Right there. Fish,
yeah,
wins.
So Fish must have you know hypnotized her with his fucking magical eyes. Remember they were saying something about him would mesmerize.
Yeah, I mean he just fucking threw down on the floor and stuck cotton balls up his ass.
Which also,
fire,
they said the exact same thing with Chikatilo, that he could just, like, mesmerize his victim somehow.
Huh.
Almost hypnotize him with...
Interesting. Just the way he looked at him, that's fucking goddamn... That's
I mean, up. I guess if you're that old and decrepit, you have to have a good fucking, you know, weapon on your side.
I guess. I guess. Right. So the Hateful Eight is now the
Speck,
four.
We've got Speck, Panzram, Wuornos, and Fish.
Yeah, they're going at it in the final two matches.
That is a fucked up four.
Next, I've got a name for it. Yeah. I can't remember.
Oh, it's the fucked up four.
Yeah, fucked up four. That's cool. The fucked up four.
Fucked up four.
And so yeah, those four will be going at it next week, and then the final week of the month. We'll have Brian in here from Dark History Convention, Chris. We're going to be doing the last match, the final match, where we will determine the winner of the contest. So good luck
go Justin,
to Justin,
go Stephanie, we got
and
this, girl.
Steven.
We got this.
For being involved in it with us. It's a lot of fun. And so that'll be next week. We'll continue this shit going. So with everything getting canceled, at least March Mayhem is still fucking going on. So
fuck yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think we've done plenty of mayhem tonight, guys.
Fuck
so
yeah, we have, man.
Let's hit
it's
that fucking
good.
Outro, man.
Is this a figment of my imagination? Or is this apparition real? I can't believe that I escaped the one, but I can't escape my fate.
Fuck yeah, some new Havoc, man.
Havoc's fucking badass.
New school
badass.
New full
Phantom
thrash.
Force, man.
And Cashman, you've been to every FTA. Have they been there?
Yeah, they played.
What year?
I can't remember.
He's like, I can't remember. They all mix together now.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys are really, really good. Yeah. Definitely like that. And they got that new album coming out.
Their fifth album is coming out, yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Which I have pre-ordered.
Can't imagine.
I can't imagine it, yeah.
I noticed you waited till the outro to talk about it as opposed to the metal segment. Not so great metal motherfucker right there. No, oh. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I bring metal to everyone in every fucking segment.
That's right.
Definitely
a good show tonight, guys. CK, always killer to have you on throughout the metal mayhem and outro sections of the podcast. Joey, great to have you on, even at the last moment, still were able to pull it off. As
always
it worked
love
out.
Coming in.
Awesome,
yeah, man.
Awesome.
I'm glad you were my ride.
Right?
We could have took Dad, took pictures of Dad holding Poop Like a Champion.
Yeah,
right, right. Well, yeah, they put Jenny on half days from like now on.
I just thought it was cool,
like a last minute, like we didn't know. Till yesterday about it, so
yeah, I'm cool with that.
Bumper music by Trouble, Dying Fetus, and Havoc. Of course, CK's intro music is by who? CK,
none other than Chrysix.
That's right. And the Chrysix guys, I should get a hold of them and tell them about it.
Like, hey, bro,
I bet they'd be cool with the whole thing.
They might
so.
Do it.
I'm sure they
want.
Yeah,
like,
they seem like good dudes.
We use your music.
Yeah, we talk about them constantly, just as a thank you for doing it.
Because they're fucking badass.
Yeah, because it is badass.
And then we got the Murder Metal Mayhem music by none other than the mighty Low Motherfucking 12. And
that's
Michael
right.
reminded me the other day of what I said.
What's that?
Oh, what was it?
It was higher than 11. Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Higher than 11.
That might not even be right either. Michael's probably going to listen to this
Thursday.
Something
like that.
You're a fucking idiot.
You got it wrong twice, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, my favorite shit is the fucking Gacy Low 12 episode. When Chris comes back in and his like outro thing, you know, he's like, and keep one fist hand out, low number 12. It's just like, I want to say it. I'm probably going to at some point say it, but it's just so funny.
When I was looking at him in the eyes, when I was turning it over to him to close out the show,
fell out.
It was like, I couldn't believe that he was able to muster even that. Because I was expecting him to just literally fall over.
Yeah.
I mean, I was expecting like be, you know, it was there was nothing there.
It was like,
and
wait,
he pulled
you
that
can hear
off.
The, you can hear his, you can hear the transgression from the beginning of the show to the end.
And the beginning is bad.
Yeah.
The beginning
is
bad,
dude. That was super funny.
Michael said it took him like four tries even to get through it because it was just he was
he's
said
like,
Chris was pissing him off.
Shut the fuck up.
Dude, wow.
It's funny because like you know, before I listened to the episode, I already knew what had gone on.
Right.
So I already knew what to listen for in it.
Right.
It was funny because then all of a sudden you don't hear Chris for a while. So you're like, there it is.
There it is. He's out.
I haven't even
looked at the video yet.
Right.
It's got to be really funny.
I forgot you guys had video of it.
The whole thing.
I bet like this.
The full fucking screen. The whole thing. I never shut it off. Yeah, nice. The whole thing is on there. Check out spellboundeffectsandart.com for their incredible online catalog. Yeah. We're talking about it. Tony Campagna, just
Dude,
amazing, man.
Killing it.
Yeah, Ed Gein-inspired art, human skin lamps, aprons, cowboy hats, fucking all kinds of cool shit.
Fucking dicks.
Dicks, if you want that sort of thing. Feet, hands, heads, I mean,
Dude.
Ears, whatever, man. He makes them,
thumb
and they look
drives.
So fucking realistic.
Thumb drives.
The thumb drives are badass. I have a thumb drive from Tony, so go to check him out at spellboundeffectsandart.com. All
go
right.
to fucking goddamn Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and
you
book
need to
your
go
damn
up
tour
there.
For the Jeffrey Dahmer Cream City Cannibal Tour at Shakers, man. In
Shakers
Milwaukee.
Is amazing, man.
Dude, that place is like one of my favorite places to go. Like,
yeah.
Every time.
I thought the liquor store was.
Yes.
Oh my God, CK.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
You're not wrong, though. You're not wrong at all.
Holy fuck, dude.
Wow.
That was good.
Damn.
I love you. But no,
that
real
was like
talk.
A nuclear fucking blast.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel threatened right now, man. Shit.
It's like the Manhattan Project in here, man. Holy
yeah,
shit.
Are you going to call HR on me?
Right? Go to Milwaukee, fucking go to Shaker's Cigar Lounge and get your Cream City Cannibal Tour.
Yep.
Check out the, what's the ghost
Hangman
tour?
HangmanTours.com.
Hangman Tours, yeah.
Yeah,
Hangman
go to HangmanTours.com.
You'll have a fucking great time, I promise you.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. Don't miss next week when we're going to continue on that March Mayhem contest. So, again, best of luck to Justin, Stephanie, and Steven. So,
two fights.
That's right. We're getting down to it. Thanks to everybody listening out there. We really appreciate it, especially our new listeners in London and in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada, crushing it in the top 10 cities listening. So we appreciate everybody listening. But it's always cool to see a new city pop up like
Definitely
that.
Definitely always
so
a good time to see
it's really,
city.
Really cool.
Thank you guys for
Danbury, still number two, man, CK.
Bet your sweet ass.
Yeah, Bloomington, Illinois,
got
right behind
followers.
Him. Yeah, got Bloomington, Illinois, number three. And Dallas, Texas is number four, nice. Man. They're moving up the list. So
man, motherfucker.
Figure that one out.
Yeah,
I got
don't
a feeling
know.
We're going to get a big old blast of listens because everyone's going to be locked
yeah,
down
cooped
in their
up.
Home
yeah.
and fucking like...
We
well,
might.
I can't go out.
We might.
So whatever.
So
no, thanks out all you motherfuckers
yeah.
for listening.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Got some new fucking comments.
Yeah.
I want to read this first one.
Yeah, you want to read the first one? Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I figured you would like this one.
I just love the name. Jugs-o-fun.
Jugs-o-fun, yeah.
Jugs-o-fun.
Like, yes,
not,
they are.
Is that Michael's fucking
right,
soul?
Right, that's what I was saying.
Or is it Michael?
No, I call him.
Oh,
no, Michael,
man.
No, Michael's fucking... I call him tons of
but
fun
But what if
all
it's
the
him online,
time.
Though?
I call right. him tons of fun all
right,
day.
Right, I know.
So I'm like, oh, shit. It's fucking Jugs-o-fun. But yeah, Jugs-o-fun says, I really like the March Mayhem contest you're doing. I wish I was one of the three you guys are playing for. And you should have... And no offense, but you should have got in there real quick.
That's right. Well, Jugs of Fun, we'll do more of these contests.
Jugs of Fun, we'll do more stuff for you. And Jugs of Fun, thank you for listening. And I love the way that you made me think of my brother's fat titties.
Joey, would you like to read the second comment there?
Mike the Viper 810, 810, whichever.
Right.
He commented, CK's the fucking man. I dig his shit more every week. Has he thought about doing a podcast about Bathory or Venom?
Venom we did.
Yeah, we did Venom. Yeah. We did Venom.
And Bathory
would
have been cool
on
Elizabeth
one of the
Bathory, but
earlier episodes where we did Venom. Bathory we haven't done yet.
Yeah. Bathory would be good.
And we could do that at some point.
Yeah, Bathory would be. I know none of us are really black metal fans, but Bathory would definitely be cool.
Bathory's yeah, they
fucking,
were so good.
Because that's fucking going all the way fucking back, and Quorthon was the fucking, you know, huge that's in the beginning of that. So I think that'd be cool, CK.
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea.
Very cool. CK, you want to read the third one there?
Sure. Deathcloud 420
smoke
said
that weed.
This is the best podcast. I love the true crime meets heavy metal concept. It's so original.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
That was our goal, to try to do something a little original. That's some right?
Yeah. Yeah, we wanted to do something different. So we appreciate that. Very cool. And the last one, Cashman.
Betty Lou Simpson 78, she commented, are you guys ever going to do a podcast about Dahmer, our Cream City Cannibal?
Ah, so she's a Milwaukee.
Yeah, you're
in there.
A Milwaukee resident.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, we're going to do Dahmer eventually. We know we are, because we're going to get to all of the big ones at some point. But we try to sprinkle them out as we go.
And, you know, yeah, and as we said, go ahead, Cash.
Well, I was just going to say, I just noticed that she's only, you know, from her screen name, seems to be a year older than me. And if she's listening and she's single, I would love to bang a girl named Betty Lou. Are you serious? Betty Lou. That sounds sexy, right?
That loves cannibalism.
Yeah. So if we're off quarantine and we come up to Shaker sometime and you're out there,
I'm going
to
meet you.
Yeah, I want to meet you.
I'm going to meet you.
Betty Lou.
Fuck yeah.
So don't forget to check out MurderMetalMayhem.com. Listen to all the podcasts and bonus content. Go check out Murder Metal Mayhem's YouTube channel and subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Get Your Murder On and like us on Facebook and join the 666 Club. Support the podcast on the Patreon page. That's patreon.com/MurderMetalMayhem. So we appreciate that, guys.
You also got the activity book, too?
Blah. We got the activity book.
I need that.
Been linking to that in the episode description, because the coffee table book that should be nowhere near a coffee table. Been a big hit with the listeners.
If you've seen the coffee table on the cover of the book, you're like,
pretty gross. Pretty
might
gross.
Might get coronavirus from that.
Yeah. Yeah, that book might get banned because it promotes the coronavirus. Yeah. So speaking of the coronavirus, we're going to be doing a special change up next week. We had one in mind, a little vigilante slaying, which is a good one, and we're going to do it.
No, this is great.
Yeah, but we've decided, because of everything going on,
we're
going
to do it something different just because it fits the setting of life right
now, basically. And we're doing the Black Death.
We are the plague.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about plagues next week, and the Black Plague specifically, but with everything going on, it'll be definitely interesting to talk about that.
That'll be good. It'll be fun.
So we can't let him go without hearing this new karaoke song. And just like the episode is that we're just going to be doing next week, I did this one with all the drama of the coronavirus going on.
No, the lyric change is great, dude.
Thanks.
No, the lyric change is great.
Thanks. I tried to do something different. So this is a parody of a song, and I know that someone else did this already because you sent me the link to it.
I was like, fuck.
Like someone else beat you
metal,
to it.
They didn't do it Murder Metal Mayhem style.
No, it's total pussy version of it. Yeah. So this is the real version. So check this shit out, and until next time, keep one foot in the gutter
and your fist pushing some motherfucking poser at the front. Infect.
US Corona fever and chills. Get to me, sweat is pouring down my face. My Corona, stomachy, got them chills, stop pouring out. Can't wipe my ass, storage out of toilet paper.
I just want to punch myself in the dick when I hear that. I just want to punch myself in the dick when I hear that. I just want to punch myself in the dick when I hear that. I just want to punch myself in the dick when I hear that.
Mother! Mother! Man!